This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Judge, I misspoke to the court. The
Malik debt is 58
minutes and
55
seconds.
Well, you owe me 3 minutes and 5 seconds.
Just let you know, because I don't know how long the question is going to take.
Well, and this is the one that was 2 hours and something.
It was.
Yeah.
That's progress. I'm very pleased about this.
There we go. Anything before we bring in the jury?
We have the dates of the videos, Your Honor, if you want those.
What are those, and you want me to just announce them?
Sorry.
Not the TGH video. Are you done with the other two?
We have the date of the TGH video. It's August 14th, 2015. The EEG video when he's transferring her into the wheelchair is October 20th, 2016. And the piano video in the lobby is January 3rd, 2017.
Okay. And you want me to just announce those dates to the jury?
Yep. No objection.
Sure.
Okay, let's bring in the jury. Let's bring in Dr. Cecil. Please be seated. Members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves, you did no investigation, and you received no information. Is that all correct?
Correct.
And no media, correct?
Correct.
No one approached you, correct?
Correct.
In the questions, there was a request for the dates of the various videos that were shown to this witness. And I'm just going to tell you the dates of those videos. The Tampa General Hospital video was August 14th, 2015. The EEG video was the October 20th, 2016. The piano in the lobby was January 3rd, 2017. Members of the jury, I went over these questions with the lawyers outside of Dr. Cecil's presence, so this will be the first time he's heard these. In the video, it seems odd that you would try to make Maya stand up without some equipment or warm-up. There was also a question about the date of this video, so any comment on that statement?
Sure. So I think that video was one of the very first times I met her, so what's not shown in that video is probably what we did in bed, if we did any activity in bed, trying to assess where she was at that day. I don't know for sure, I can't recall exactly, but once we sat edge of bed, as we've talked about, she wasn't kicking her legs, she wasn't moving her ankles. But what we did see in the video is once we were sitting edge of bed, she was interacting with us, she was pleasant, and when we were ready to complete that transfer, we call it a stand pivot transfer, going from one surface to another via a pivot. She leaned forward and leaned into it and participated with us. Yes, she needed a lot of assistance, but she was actively participating in that transfer. So what we did before that moment, I can't recall exactly, but doing that transfer, she was actively participating in that. And willing to do so.
Does it not seem reasonable Maya would be moving and sitting better during the piano video, given it was January 3rd, 2017, and she would have had numerous physical therapy sessions?
Yes, exactly. I think that's exactly the point, is that we've been working with her that entire time, working on sitting activities, so it's entirely reasonable that her sitting is better, because that's a lot of what we worked on. We were working on core strength, core stability, sitting balance, dynamic sitting balance. So I think it's entirely reasonable that by January that it improves, because that is the majority of what we were working on.
Did you think that her curbing Maya's lack of participation was due to her growing depression with being away from home?
I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know that I can comment on depression or anything of that sort. I think that's outside of my scope of practice. So,
is distraction a typical tool to use in PT with children?
Yes, I think it's one of the most common tools that we use. You know, sometimes we have, you know, we see kids of all ages, and when we're in the hospital, they're focused on a lot of the things other than what we want or need them to do. So for Maya, we use distraction to get her focus off of the pain and onto an activity to improve her strength and function. For another patient, say like a 3-year-old who has cancer, we might use play as a distraction. Instead of, you know, we're not going to engage in conversation with a 3-year-old, but we're going to present toys that they enjoy or an activity that they enjoy at home in order to distract them from all the lines and tubes and everything else going around them in the hospital to focus on the task to improve their function or whatever their goals are.
Before caring for Maya, had you had any formal training provided by Johns Hopkins on CRPS?
Yes, I had. So when I was a student, I had a clinical internship at Johns Hopkins, all children's in their outpatient sports clinic. And during that time, we had seen several CRPS patients. So I was under, at that time, I was under the clinical supervision of a licensed therapist, and we had frequent discussions about what proper treatment is for patients with that condition. Also, when I became licensed and got hired as an employee at Johns Hopkins, you know, when you're a new employee, you have clinical mentors who you can throw ideas off of, treatment ideas, things like that. As was brought up, there was another PT who was also treating Maya at the same time, so we would frequently go back and forth with treatment ideas or techniques or things that we could try during various sessions. So there was a significant support in training, I feel, prior to seeing Maya.
Before caring for Maya, how many CRPS patients had you cared for?
So prior to seeing Maya, I finished that 4-year degree in physical therapy school where we talk about chronic pain, we talk about CRPS and proper treatment. I had seen 2 or 3 maybe during my clinical internship, maybe 4. And then during, while I was licensed before Maya, between my outpatient experience and inpatient experience, it was probably around 5.
Is it more common to have a spasm with passive movement on a limb that has not been moved in a long time?
Can you repeat that one more time? Sorry.
Is it more common to have a spasm with passive movement on a limb that has not been moved in a long time?
I don't know that it's more common. Spasms can be caused by different reasons. So passive range of motion is, like I said, the patient doing no active movement, right? They're not squeezing their muscle. They're not activating any of their muscle fibers. It's simply the therapist lifting their leg, working on range of motion, usually of a joint. So like I said before, if you're weak in that leg or that muscle's not used to extending and flexing with what we're doing, it can cause a spasm. But also, you know, with active range of motion, those can cause spasms too. And there are other reasons that spasms cause with no motion. My work with Maya, from what I recall and from the documentation, that's the only spasm I noted. And the 20 hours I spent with her, 21 sessions, that was the only time I documented on a spasm. And I don't recall any other active or passive spasms during my time with her.
Other physical therapists that worked with Maya indicated in testimony that CRPS patients find cross-leg position, criss-cross applesauce, the most comfortable for that condition. Is that not your knowledge with regard to that leg position?
So my experience with CRPS over the last 9 years is that it's highly variable. CRPS can affect any limb of the body, in any joint of the body. So and that allodynia, that hypersensitivity to touch, can be in various areas. So it's really highly dependent on where the patient is having their pain, what it feels like for them, and then what their comfort positions are. So I don't know that I could say in general that crisscross is a overall general comfort position for patients with CRPS. If I have a patient with a CRPS of their elbow, they're not going to have a problem getting into crisscross. But if I have another patient who has CRPS of their knee or in their knee, crisscross may be very difficult, or it might be that comfort position. It's highly variable how these patients present. So I wouldn't say, I can say in general that that's a comfort position in general for CRPS patients.
I see in your note from December 1st, 2016, and then also documented in January, that you documented, quote, transfers to and from the couch with max assist, end quote. Can you please define max assist to the jury?
Sure. So in therapy, we use different terms to describe how much assist a patient needs, and it's a scale. So max assist would mean the therapist is providing 75% and the patient is providing 25% of the effort to complete that task. So 75% total assist would be 100% for the therapist. Mod assist, as I said earlier, is 50-50. Min assist would be 75% for the patient and 25% for the therapist. And then we use words like contact guard assist, which is mean just like holding their hand or holding their back for support, or standby assist, which is being close and monitoring, but seeing them do it by themselves.
Did you have any interactions with Kathy Beatty regarding Maya's care?
I remember working with Kathy Beatty. I don't remember having any conversations specifically with her about Maya.
So you wouldn't know how often those interactions were?
No idea.
Did you attend interdisciplinary rounds on Maya?
I remember having many communications with various providers about Maya and her case and how she's presenting and kind of giving my input. I don't recall attending any specific interdisciplinary rounds where everyone got together.
So if you don't recall, then you wouldn't know who was present.
Correct. Okay.
Were you aware if upper or senior management was aware of Maya being in your hospital?
I have no reference to know whether they did or didn't.
We have heard testimony Maya was a fall risk. Is it a policy at the hospital to use a gait belt when transferring children with a fall risk at the hospital?
There are various thoughts on gait belts, whether they're helpful or not. I believe after this video, we did have gait belt on her frequently. I think during the video you saw, I didn't have a gait belt because that was one of my first times seeing her, and I was assessing what she was able to do. Still providing the proper assistance to make sure she didn't fall, she was safe, monitored. But afterwards, I do believe we had a gait belt on her when we brought her down to the therapy gym and things like that.
The exhibit 1002-0188 that read conversion disorder as a treatment diagnosis had an admitted date of January 6, 2017. Do you know if this diagnosis was listed on the previous admitted date, October 7, 2016, when you first started therapy?
I don't know off the top of my head. The way those medical diagnoses are are viewed from a physical therapy perspective is the doctors make those medical diagnoses, and they end up in our chart based on what the physicians consult us for. We're a consulting service, so in order for us to come see a patient, the physician has to consult us to come and work with them. My treatment diagnoses under that are the physical therapy treatment diagnoses, the things that we're trying to improve. I think that answers the question.
Next question. Back in 2015, when you were employed by Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, you were very book smart, but you were new to the position. Now, 8 years later, I believe you testified what therapies you use for CRPS today are the same that was used in treatment for Maya back then. In 8 years since Maya, you are saying there has been no improvements in the therapies used for CRPS patients? And that's a question.
So the conservative physical therapy treatments that we use for all CRPS patients are research-based. They're contained and research is shown within what's called the clinical practice guideline, which is held by the APTA, which is the American Physical Therapy Association, which is the national organization over physical therapy. So they have it's called a clinical practice guideline. So it has the collection of the research that shows that physical therapy treatment, various physical therapy treatments are effective and beneficial for the treatment of complex regional pain syndrome. Every so often, you know, no new research comes out. To my knowledge, you know, the graded exercise that I've talked about all day today, that, you know, based on how the patient is doing, pushing them within their limits to do as much as they can, grading them up to do more, grading down if it's a day where they're having more pain or more complaints. That is the standard for physical therapy treatment. We have options within there, like therapeutic exercise, working on ADLs, things like neuromuscular re-ed, which is kind of making the connection between the nervous system and the body in order to improve the function. But at the end of the day, the big goal of physical therapy, what you're trained to do in school and in your internships and in your training on the job, is to find those impairments, find those difficulties, a range of motion, the strength, the walking, and then develop a treatment plan to improve those things. And that's exactly what we did with Maya. The treatment plan I wanted to perform with her didn't go exactly as we wanted, right? As I said before, she wasn't walking when she left, but we did things every single session that was inside that clinical practice guideline in order to help her improve in her function.
Dr. Cecil, you stated at first Maya was 5 or 6 times a week for therapy, is that correct?
Yes.
As time went on, it was lessened because Maya refused or couldn't do it. Refresh my memory, was it refused or could not?
It's a combination of both. She, you know, at the beginning, if you're reading through the notes, the first several times I saw her, we were attempting to stand. We were, you know, supported standing with assistance in order to start building strength in our legs and to tolerate standing more. The goal of those sessions is to work through the pain, in order to become more functional. Oftentimes what we see in chronic pain patients, CRPS and other chronic pain, is that function improves before pain improves. And that was our goal, is to improve her function. That's the physical therapy goal, is improve her function. So as we kept going, her function was improving in some ways, but in the areas that we wanted to see improvement, the standing, walking, participating in those things, she was flat out refusing, which we were never going to push her past and into something that she was refusing to do. We were never going to make her do something that she said she couldn't do. When she was agreeable, when she would take in any education and participate in things that we know would be beneficial, then we would do those things together. But at the point where we decreased her from that 6 times a week to 3 times a week, we had gotten to the point where it had been several sessions where we had plateaued and not made any progress. We had reached those goals that she left with. So that's why we decreased her, with that knowledge of if she can start doing more, if during those 3 times a week that we're still seeing her, she can start doing more, she can show us that, hey, look, I can move my legs a little bit, I can tolerate it, I want to try, I'm not going to refuse, then we would have immediately moved her back up to a higher frequency and seen her more often.
Could this, quote, could not, would not, end quote, been a result in Maya's CRPS affecting her physical or mental abilities and therefore her performance?
Do you mind repeating that one more time?
Could this, could not, would not, been a result in Maya's CRPS affecting her physical or mental abilities and therefore her performance?
Certainly her medical condition affects how she's going to participate, how she's feeling, how she interprets her pain affects how she participates in therapy, 100%. Her mental capacity, that's outside my scope. I'm not going to comment on that. But our job as a physical therapist, as I mentioned, is we're going to grade what activity we do. Like I said, grade up, grade down based on how she's feeling and her feedback on certain activities. So if she, I think there was a good example in there of sitting in her wheelchair, she was doing well, we were doing things, and I wanted her to transition to a chair that had no arms. I had seen her sitting in her wheelchair without using the arms, so I was like, oh, let's transition, maybe a stand pivot, maybe a scoot into this chair that has no arms, and then continue doing what we're doing. But she would say she couldn't do it, she refused. I would try to educate her on why that's important and how, hey, it's the same, it's just another chair without arms that you're not using anyways. But I didn't make her do it. If she refused and said she couldn't, or she was fearful of falling, even with me there guarding her and protecting her, we didn't go there. We didn't do that.
Mr. Hughes, any follow-up?
No, thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Testified that the only time he had noted the muscle spasms. Can we look at 1001-1914? Top of the page. You see right there in the top?
Can you go to the previous page so we can see the whole sentence?
Page 5. You want to see the page prior? Is that you?
Yes, sir.
Let's look at 1947. Second from the bottom. Well, third line from the bottom. 1947. It's actually second line, yeah, from the bottom. Yep. There you go. Okay, let's see. Is that you?
Yes, sir.
3 times that you noted muscle spasms in her legs. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
And when you started out, she was receiving some pain meds, but then you stopped those as time went on, right?
I don't have anything to do with muscle or medications. I don't prescribe. I don't give them out. I have nothing to do with medication.
Mr. Hughes, anything?
No.
Members of the jury, any follow-up? Okay, may this witness be excused?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. And release from subpoenas?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, members of the jury, we have, I understand, a deposition that is...
Can we approach?
Yeah, sure. Is we have about 1 hour video. This is the video that we started the other day that was going to be more than 2 hours, but we've got it down to just under 1 hour. So
58 minutes, 55 seconds.
Like I said, just under an hour. So I say we just do it right now and you'll get out of here about 5:15. Do you want the lights remain or do you want them dimmed some? It looks like everyone, am I saying everyone wants them up or down? All but one want them up. I'm sorry. Let's, Ms. Carrells, if you could tell us who we're calling again.
Yes, it is the deposition of Dr. Farhan Malik, taken on November 12, 2019.
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
Farhan Malik.
And you are a physician in practice employed by Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
Yes.
And where did you go to college?
New York Institute of Technology.
Here you graduated?
2005, yeah.
Medical school?
New York College of Osteopathic Medicine.
And where is that located?
It's also located with New York Institute of Technology. They're both in Long Island.
And what year did you graduate your 4 years there?
2009.
For the benefit of the jury, can you give them a very brief description of the differences, if any, between an MD and a doctor of osteopathic medicine?
Sure. The degree is actually called a DO.
Yeah.
It essentially is very similar to MD schooling. You just take additional courses in osteopathic manipulation, which I liken it to chiropractic. And so you have the option of practicing that in when you graduate versus just practicing as a regular doctor.
Again, I don't know how accurate this is because I'm just reading off the internet, but osteos tend to be literally more hands-on with a patient. I mean, there's more manipulation and testing, feeling, touching, that kind of thing in diagnosing.
You take classes in the manipulation aspect of it, and if you choose to practice that once you're done and incorporate that into your practice, if you're in a field where you can, such as internal medicine or general practice, becomes a little different when you become more and more specialized.
The area that you chose to go into was critical care with a focus on cardiac, is that right?
Yes, cardiac intensive care.
All right. And where did you do your residency?
Newark Beth Israel Hospital, so the Children's Hospital of New Jersey.
And what year did you, what years were those?
So that would be 09 to 2012.
And after residency, what did you do?
I did my fellowship in pediatric critical care the University of Texas in Houston.
All right. And what year were you licensed to practice medicine in the state of Florida?
2015.
So at the time you saw Maya Kowalski and her October 7th admission, you had been a licensed physician in Florida for 15 months? So you've made 12, May, June, July, August, September. So about 16, 17 months?
Yes, I believe, approximately.
You were a fairly young doctor, relatively speaking, experience-wise.
Yes.
And were you licensed in any other states?
New Jersey.
And what year were you licensed in New Jersey?
That would be at the start of my, or the conclusion of my residency, so that would be 2012.
So after your fellowship at UT Houston, where did you go?
Johns Hopkins Old Children's.
And what was your position?
Pediatric critical care physician.
And what does a pediatric critical care physician do?
All things involving intensive care. So if a child gets admitted to the ICU for any number of reasons, trauma, sepsis, after surgeries.
Would it be fair to state then that as of October of 2016, you were not an expert in complex regional pain syndrome slash also known as RSD?
Yes, that's very fair.
Would it be fair to say that as of October of 2016, you were not an expert in medical child abuse?
Yes.
You were not an expert in factitious disorder by proxy?
Yes.
You were not an expert in a conversion disorder?
You're listing a lot of psychiatric disorders that, no, I am not an expert in because I'm not a pediatric psychiatrist. So.
Okay. And then Munchausen by proxy, same answer?
Yes.
Not an expert in that either. All right. When was the first time you met Dr. Sally Smith, if you recall?
I don't believe I've actually ever met her.
Have you ever spoken with her on the phone?
I can't recall exactly, but I might have spoken with her regarding this case.
Did you know of her, even if you didn't speak to
yes.
her or see her?
Yes.
And what did you know of her as of, say, you know, the period before
sure.
October?
That she was our go-to person to speak to if you had concerns of child abuse.
On any of Maya's prior admissions or visits to the ER at ACH, had you ever run into either her or her family?
No.
So the first time you ever met any of them would have been on that October 7th visit?
Correct.
And do you know Dr., and I'm going to, it's Tepes Sanchez, but I think everybody just calls her Dr. Tepes. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Did you know Dr. Tepes before this admission?
Yes, we're colleagues.
And how long had you worked together?
A couple of months.
There has to be some structure in your mind about, do I make a call, don't I make a call, or do I recommend a call or not recommend a call?
Part of being a pediatrician, if you suspect child abuse, by law, you're obligated to report it.
So what are some of the things that create a suspicion to you?
Physician, why don't we just let you go home?
Okay.
Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do the investigation and receive the numbers now. Tomorrow we're going to start 15 minutes later than normal. So I need the jury to be ready to go at 9:15 as opposed to 9. You get 15 more minutes to sleep in.
Awareness. All rise. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Please be seated.
So we'll try again with this one after we.
Yeah, John, I'm not sure. My apologies to the court. I don't know why we're where we're at with that, but I will look at what's going on and confirm.
Let's talk about what we need to do with the remainder of our time. You were saying something about Dr. Hanna's deposition, right?
Oh, yeah. Judge, I don't know if this was a miscue. Again, everybody's trying to do, you know, five other things. My understanding is we only designated pages in the 2020 deposition that we're going to play. I think the other side maybe was looking at old designations and spent a lot of time looking at the 2022 or 23 dep. But my question to the other side is, time, you'll never get back. I get that. We are only playing the 2020 dep. Did the other side also want to play designations from the 2023 dep? If so, we'll look at those.
Yes, we would, because we didn't get a substantive cross until the later deposition.
Okay. So you intended to do those designations?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I needed to confirm, so we would look at those for objections.
And
okay.
I'd be happy to look at a quip report once it's done to make
yes,
sure.
Yes, I'll be happy to send that to you.
And so do I have, I know I've gotten two Dr. Hanna depositions, but do I have the objections?
For, no.
I only have one side's objections?
We haven't seen their, we haven't had a chance to see their counters, Judge. They just got filed, so we have not looked at their counters for objections yet.
And What time do you think you'll get a chance to do that?
One of us will make it a priority as soon as we get to the hotel, Judge, to look at those. If we're leaving early, we'll do that as soon as we get back to look at their counters for objections.
Okay. And then why don't you use the email that over the weekend?
Yes.
And I'll be at a place with no electronic service capabilities until after 10 p.m. tonight. So I won't be able to get you anything until close to 10 or around 10 tonight. And then depending on when I get your designations and the volume of it, that might impact
sure.
The time I'll return it.
It's a 325-page deposition, volume one. So,
well, we didn't designate that much.
Forewarning.
Just on that point, since I know your shot clock is where it is, we only designated like 15, 20 minutes. Did you designate hours of this?
We designated a fair amount. I can't quantify it.
I mean, okay.
They have been better this week on usage of time.
Okay. Your Honor, just to piggyback on the last question, we do intend to publish some of the emails that are admitted in evidence, and I hear there is an objection from the plaintiff about just publishing them. We're looking for some guidance. Would they like us to recall our expert, Dr. Crane, or one of our experts to publish them through, just so that way we have the right personnel if they're just objecting to us publishing them?
I mean, they're admissions.
They're admissions by a party. I don't know that I need to do it through a witness. I obviously don't have the witness who wrote them to publish them. So if I just, we're running out of trial days. I just didn't want to get in a situation where the plaintiff's going to object to the publishing. If they require them to do it through experts, then I'm happy to recall experts.
We'd like some consistency here. We've heard repeatedly throughout this trial objections to us publishing documents unless there are three certain witnesses. We've heard repeated objections and they're out of context. So if we're free to publish party admissions out of context, I'd like to consider it with Mr. Anderson and get back to them in the morning.
I'm trying to remember, because I know the defense has raised that identical objection. I'm trying to remember how I handled it.
Judge, I know that there was at least one thing that was published to the jury, because I was going, there's no context, and you said it's in evidence, and they published it. So I don't recall what it was. I don't know if it was a policy or what exactly that was, to be honest.
Was that the one right after a video dep?
I don't. Honestly,
I remember doing a couple right after a video deposition, and I don't remember if those were exhibits that were referenced in that deposition or if they just were freestanding. And I just don't remember.
I think they were just freestanding, Judge, because I remember losing the objection. But in all honesty, I couldn't tell you what it was at this time.
You won't be surprised we have different memories of that.
Well, again, just because I know that we have to give them 24 hours notice for what witnesses are coming, assuming they don't want us to be calling witnesses into Wednesday, we would just like to know who they would require. I just don't want to have Dr. Crane come back by Zoom, put them on in front of him. If they don't want us to just publish them without a witness, I'm happy to call a witness, but there's obviously only so many witnesses I could do in context.
Are you talking about doing all of the ones I admitted yesterday?
There's so many of them, no. My plan today would have just been to publish two and maybe three. It would have taken 10 minutes of our case to do so.
Is it two and maybe three and that's it, or is it two and maybe three at intervals going forward?
Probably two to maybe three at intervals going forward. We only have four trial days left, so that would be 10 minutes of publishing per day.
I'd like to discuss it with Mr. Anderson and see what our position is going
to
be.
That's fine, but let's come to a final resolution in the morning on it. I mean, obviously it's preferable to do it with a witness, but if they are in evidence, you know, ultimately they're in evidence.
Understood.
What's next? Are there other exhibits that we're needing to go through?
Okay.
I mean, since we've found ourselves with a few minutes, I mean, might as well try to
packing up. Let me
use the time efficiently. And since there's not a further witness today, the shot clock stands today. Plaintiffs consumed an hour 20 minutes, and that places you at 54 hours. The defense consumed 2 hours, 30 minutes. That places you at 33 hours. 33 hours.
You ready, Judge?
Yes, ma'am.
So I would like to, I appreciate this is another email, but it's a different time frame than what's in. It's 32320141, and I think we have an edited version that just contains Beata Kowalski's Facebook post. But it's October 12th, 2015. I had a chance to look at the emails that the court has allowed in. This is the only email that addresses this. This is her description of the ketamine treatment that she was undergoing with Dr. Kirkpatrick. 32320141, and I believe you edited it so that it only had... I have a hard copy here. Well, that's too edited. I can't do that.
That's 3231, not 3232.
Oh, yeah, I need 3232. There we go. So, Judge, this is... dated October 12, 2015, and if you look at the description, it is her description.
Can you make it a little bit bigger? Thank you.
Of the ketamine treatment that she's undergoing with Dr. Kirkpatrick. describes how it was, describes the hallucinations that Maya experienced. And it goes on to the next page.
Well, I need to finish.
I have a hard copy, Nick, if you could pick it.
Next page, please.
And this was edited to end at, should be edited after the top, after the top paragraph. We would delete the rest, which I thought had been done. So this is the only description of the ketamine treatment with Dr. Kirkpatrick. The other emails started after this, Your Honor.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Whitney.
We object, Your Honor, based on the court's previous statements about the number of emails that have already been let in. We object on 403, we object on hearsay, and we also reiterate that this goes to none of the pending claims. I think the court's still waiting on a response on Fabre. And as the court pointed out the other day, however Maya presented at the hospital on October 7, 2016, you don't go back and recreate the accident to figure out what happened a year prior. So there's no relevance of this email from our perspective, or Facebook post.
That just goes to the concerns that the doctors had with regard to the amount of ketamine. It also goes to dispelling the presentation that's been given to this jury by Dr. Patrick, that this was very safe, that there were no issues, that it was not a problem. Clearly, there was a lot of issues during it, as described by Mrs. Kowalski, who was there.
Then the last reference to the GoFundMe.
Well, that's we can take that object.
The exhibit, with the exception of the GoFundMe, I'm fine with.
Okay. So we'll end it. We'll take out four more updates in the remaining sentence.
Let's make sure the clerk gets a printout of the updated exhibit.
Okay.
What's next?
Let me just make a mark to it. These are Dr. Patrick's billing records. 3309. It's on the,
How many pages are we looking at? Go ahead and scroll next page. Next page. What is this? We're on page 3. What is this?
Page 3.
What is page 3?
I'm sorry?
I'm asking Ms. Quarles, what is page 3?
I'm sorry, what is page 3?
Yes.
It looks like the health insurance claim form, Judge, but I'm not sure why.
Next page. Next page. Next page. Next. Next page. Next page.
That's last page.
Can you go to the first page, if you don't mind, Mark? And the next page, too. Well, we're going to withdraw it. I don't think it makes sense in sequence.
Okay. What's next?
Can we have 1 second, Jim?
No. Okay. That's fine.
Judge, just for the record, can we go to 3023? So. I'm not sure if the courts rule on these. I understand this is our hospital records, and I understand that Your Honor has not allowed the testimony of Dr. Alexander. We went over that yesterday, I believe it was. These are the actual records, so I wasn't sure if the plaintiffs are objecting to all of these records going in or just the records with the statement that mother states, et cetera. Does Your Honor recall the issue? Am I being clear?
Give me a little bit more.
Sure. We wanted to play the deposition of Dr. Alexander, who had the history from the mother that she states that she was injecting ketamine into her port. Your Honor, it did not allow us to present that testimony. These are the records from that visit, which obviously include more than just that one statement. So we wanted to put the records in, the records in. Understanding that that statement's in there, I didn't know if the court was going to require us to redact that or if none of the records were coming in, and I wasn't sure of the plaintiff's position.
We'd be fine with the redactions, but it'd be a 403 issue without the redactions. I think we've discussed this at length.
Cool. What we discussed was the deposition. I don't think I discussed the records, but the concept of IV ketamine at home needs to come out of these records if they exist in there.
They do, Judge. That's what he was testifying from, and he was testifying from the history he took that is in the records where it says mom states that she is giving, I don't remember the exact quote, but ketamine at home.
I still maintain there's a significant 403 issue with the concept of the ketamine via IV at home issue that has been discussed for years. So that concept, if it is out of the medical records redacted, then I don't
think
that's
going to have a problem. We will look at the record and...
I was just going to say, there's actually two doctors in these records that say more or less the same thing, so we just need to make sure we get both sets redacted.
We will redact based on the court's rulings, and then show it to counsel and go from there.
Thank you.
And next.
Okay. 3080.
38. Just exhibit
38? I was going to ask him. It's a video.
Yeah, aren't they four digits?
I'm sorry, I thought I said 38. 3080. I don't have that. You don't have it? Okay, let's get that.
Oh, 30.
Yeah, sorry.
So you don't have that 3080?
No.
Okay. Judge, I'd like to address 3217. These are going to look familiar to you, Your Honor. It's 570 to 574. So 3217, 570 to 574. I don't believe that we've ever resolved the issue. We've discussed them a couple of times. These are the emails between Beata and Charlotte LaPorte. This is the last time I tried to bring it up. Your Honor said, wait a minute, aren't there four pages? And I said, let me get that and we'll come back. These are the four pages, Judge. I think the plaintiff wanted all of them in if any went in. They start backwards, so you may recall them. They start on 573, would be the first one. It's a November 15th email from Beata to Charlotte LaPorte at 9:25 in the morning.
Well, it looks like there's something before this.
Number four is just thank you.
So. Yeah, go to 574 so the judge can see it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's just the end.
Okay, go back to the...
And then it is Ms. LaPorte's response on November 16th at 10:39 a.m.
Can you go to the 572 page? Can you go back to 573? Go back to 572. I guess I need to go to 571 now. Back to 72. Let's go to 70. Thank you. reviewed it, so now what is it that you are seeking to do?
I'm sorry?
What is it that you're seeking to introduce?
Well, I just wanted the one email, but the plant wanted all of them. So I'm seeking to introduce all of these, Judge. First of all, the communications by Charlotte LaPorte are done from her business email. They are a business record. It's her communicating to Ms. Kowalski in the scope of her employment and role with DCF. So I think that those emails are business records. These emails by Viata are admissions. She's admitting that she was told that she had restrictions. She's admitting their statements of a party. So I think her emails come in. She admits she didn't read the rules. She admits that she was told to not do certain things. She acknowledges that she will try to follow the rules in the future. Charlotte LaPorte's emails also a prior consistent statement when she was testifying with regard to being the person on the November 15th, 2016 call that was played for the jury where she redirected Ms. Kowalski. So they believe for numerous hearsay exceptions, they also are plan of action and they're not hearsay. So we believe that they, for multiple reasons, are admissible.
Everything Ms. Corrales just stated applies to Trial Exhibit 2123-610. This is the email from Kathy Beattie, party admission, to Charlotte LaPorte and her business account that was previously excluded regarding the phone calls. That was excluded. We argued over that strongly. If this comes in, because it's a business account of Charlotte LaPorte and it's a party admission, then 2123-610, we move for reconsideration.
Well, don't y'all have agreed to that these are authentic?
Yes.
That doesn't mean the hearsay exception for business records has been shown or demonstrated. So I don't see where there would be a hearsay exception that would apply for Charlotte LaPorte's statements.
Well, Adam, can we call Ms. LaPorte then to testify regarding this is her email, a business email, this is the normal way she conducts her business and how normal way she communicates with persons that she needs, parents that she needs to communicate in her role as a DCF employee, if that's the issue.
What is it that you're trying to get and use? Let's look at it that way.
Sure. This is, there are issues in this case that the plaintiff is raising with regard to, first of all, this phone call they have testified was Ms. Edie on the call. We called Ms. LaPorte, who testified it was herself. This is confirmation that it was her on the call because she's telling Viata, I had to redirect you on the phone call. So it's referencing that same phone call. That's why I'm saying it's a prior consistent statement. Also, they plaintiffs are taking position and making a claim that to the extent Ms. Beattie redirected Ms. Viata Kowalski on phone calls, that was inappropriate, and disregarding the issue of whether she had the authority to do it, this establishes that what she was redirecting her from are the same things DCF said you cannot talk about. You cannot talk about pain. You cannot talk about the case. You cannot talk about her therapies. So it's confirmation that Ms. Beattie was redirecting her to the extent she did in line with the guidelines that were set up and established with this first phone call by Ms. LaPorte on behalf of DCF. So it goes to numerous issues that the plaintiff is attacking the defense for doing, including the identity of who was on that call that they continue to maintain despite Ms. LaPorte's testimony that it was herself.
Well, the jury doesn't believe her either, but that's a different issue. Your Honor, this is fundamentally sword and shield. They want to focus on the November 15th phone call because of these emails. And then we want to raise the November 29th phone call where there are party admissions by Ms. Beattie, and they want to duck back behind DCF in that instance and say, no, November 29th call, we can't talk about that. We can talk all day long about the November 15th phone call, put emails in about that. But we can't put in emails about the November 29th call. And Ms. Beattie is clearly here saying I'm honored at the call, and I have all sorts of issues with the way that was conducted.
Judge, the November 29th...
Let's just put the November 29th so I can look at it again.
Yes, to remind the court, the November 20th... I don't know the exhibit number.
2123-610, please.
The email they wanted in was communication regarding recommendations being made to the court. That is opening up the DCF action. This goes to a disputed issue of fact in the case that they have raised, calling Ms. LeBright actually a liar for testifying that she was the one on the phone call.
Again, this is not an email to the court. This is an email from Ms. Beattie to Ms. LaPorte, just like the one you just saw, Your Honor. This is the same exact circumstance, except instead of being Ms. Kowalski, it's Ms. Beattie.
Here's where I'm at. With respect to what we're looking at now, which is 2123-610, I continue to maintain that that is out. It goes to a Chapter 39 issue, which is a request from the hospital to change the dependency court's order. Going back to the other one, there is no exception to the hearsay for purposes of business records. That foundation hasn't been laid. Now, the statement that Charlotte LaPorte said with respect to who was on the telephone call is a prior consistent statement, which that for that small portion is supported by a hearsay exception. So that portion can come in. It goes to a specific issue in the case. Now, let's pull that email up and see if there's any fair way to redact it.
3217. I found no objection with your phone call.
Okay, it says also yesterday when you were on the phone, I had to redirect due.
Yes.
Let's see the next page. Well, Mr. Whitney, at this point, I'm thinking of just letting that one sentence in. I mean, obviously, the header saying who it's from and who it's to.
In the future, if my...
Can you put 572 and 573 up together?
Which sense, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Okay, down on 572, where it starts with also yesterday.
Understood. And so...
So we would redact out everything after hello, Beata, until you got to also yesterday, and then the next sentence, in the future, that to Ms. LaPorte's signature line would be redacted.
But we're redacting in the future.
So, Your Honor, I go back to understanding where the court is with this. I go back to a position that we discussed, I think it was last week, which is it is prejudicial to us to only include Ms. LaPorte's communication in this regard. So if this four pages are coming in piecemeal fashion, then we would insist that Beata Kowalski's communications regarding her compliance, her intended compliance, her notification that she didn't get the rules because she sent them too late, etc., also come in.
Well, what I was going to say is that one sentence, I think, is supported by a hearsay exception, which is a prior consistent statement. Now, if you want under a rule of completeness theory all four pages, that's a different issue.
Yes, we would, except I think there are issues with, perhaps, I haven't sat down with this email, but I think there's probably issues that still weighed into Chapter 39 territory, so rule of completeness, maybe with certain redactions, but if we're going to let this in, we request the entire exchange come in under rule of completeness.
That's fine, Judge.
Well, then why don't you look, Mr. Whitney, to see if there's anything from a Chapter 39 perspective that can be selectively redacted.
Okay. Even tonight or now?
I think tonight.
Yes, Your Honor, I'll do it.
Because is this something for tomorrow?
No.
Well.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you. But I'm giving you the choice of just having that one sentence or the balance of it. What's next?
Do you want to do more?
Let's go another 10 minutes and then let's call it a day.
We want to do our depth injections. All right. Let me see. I don't think there's anything.
Okay, 38 is ready.
Oh, 3080 is ready, Judge.
3080. Let's put it up, please.
Hold.
This is 5-17-16, Jen.
Well, we already have something like this.
The one that they put in is she's in a wheelchair. Clearly, she's moving her legs. She's getting up and down, showing use of her legs.
Well, she's on her knees, but you already have videos with her on her knees.
Well, she's moving from a sitting position up to her knees.
Well, I mean, we have a couple of the dog videos and with her getting onto her knees.
Okay, this is pre.
This is pre.
Before
the hospitalization, Judge.
The dog
is after the hospitalization.
Five months after the hospitalization.
When was the other music video?
The one that the plaintiff put in?
July 2016.
That's enough music videos. So this one's cumulative.
Okay. Judge, we didn't, I don't know, recall what happened to 3054-116. The plaintiff had an objection to page 609. And pardon my short-term memory loss, but I don't recall if the court ruled on page 609 of their objection. It was the one that had the various comments.
I'm not sure which
is here. Put it up in Madam.
It's the Venice High School, page 609, that had the various, you objected to the one page. 3054.
Can you give us the number again? The clerk wants to know the number.
Sure, I'm sorry. 3054. And then it says page 609. But I think that was the Bates number we figured out.
It's
ID'd only, okay.
Okay. So this was the one, yes.
Oh, this is one where I was wondering whether RN is actually the initials of a person as opposed to a nurse.
Yes, I just didn't know if the court had ruled on this. I didn't have any notes.
I have not let it in.
Okay, so that's fine. So for the record, 3054
The objection is to page 0011, and the court is sustaining that objection. Is that correct?
I have not let it in.
Okay. But and I, my understanding is the rest of the exhibit is not objected to. Is that correct, Mr. Whitten?
I haven't looked at the rest of the exhibit. Is it grades? If it's just grades, we don't object. If it's other counseling notes, we may object.
You did previously say page 609 objection only.
Well, what's page 12? And what's page 10?
Yeah, the rest are just grades.
I think the rest are just grades.
I mean, on the proviso, the rest are just grades. We don't object to them.
Can someone just check that before I...
We'll check it before the morning, Judge.
...officially let it in?
Yes.
You have 5 minutes left. Anything else?
Oh. I'll be left real quick, please, Judge. I think, I need to, based on the court's rulings, I don't want to take the court's time up and look at some photos we had to make sure we're just going to remove.
So that's where we're stopping today?
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow, we're going to start 15 minutes later, so 8:45 tomorrow, 8:45. Okay?
Yes.
We'll be in recess, 8:45 tomorrow.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.